Welcome to Surviving Society Presents, the Black Health and Humanities Network podcast. These episodes focus on the politics of black health in modern society.
Welcome to another episode of Surviving Society. Today, we are recording episode one of our brand new partnership with the Black Health and Humanities Network. I'm so excited today to be in conversation with Aria and Kalichi. We're going to be talking about how this network came to be, what its ambitions are, and the kind of intervention that this is in relation to the current political terrain we're working in, both within academia, but also in society more broadly. So Aria, it would be really great if you could just kick us off and explain to us a little bit about what this network is.
Yeah, thank you, Chantel. So the Black Health and Humanities Network was founded in 2020 by Dr. Josie Gill and Dr. Amber LaSalle, both based at the Centre for Black Humanities at the University of Bristol. And the network itself was born at a time where the asymmetries in access to healthcare and issues surrounding race and healthcare were really being exposed and coming to the fore in cultural consciousness, particularly in Britain. So the network was born of a critical call to address these structural asymmetries and issues, but also to create a space for early career researchers to come together and to support their development and interventions in the field of Black healthcare. So our community is comprised of academics, artists and activists, often people who are wearing multiple hats, researchers who are uniquely positioned in the sense that there is lived experience. A lot of us have intimate personal resonance with some of the material that we handle or engage with in the network. It was just a space for us to explore these ideas that were emerging in our work and work through some of these really intractable issues. At the same time, it was also, the network was born during the pandemic. So that meant that we were mediating these connections at a time when connections were quite sparse and hard to come by through a digital medium, which presented its own set of possibilities and challenges as well. And we are very excited, Kalichi and I, to be taking the network forward, co-leading the network in the new year. So the network is now hosted by the Institute for Medical Humanities at Durham University, which has just been awarded Wellcome Trust funding. And under the Discovery Research Platform, it has set up a number of different labs. So I'm leading the decolonial strand in the Narrative Practices Lab and will be working on this network in that capacity. So this network is now being hosted there for the next 3 years, and we're really excited about taking it forward in exciting new directions.
Thank you so much. What a thorough an in-depth introduction to the network. Kalichi, what can you add here?
Yeah, I mean, Aria, yeah, has done a great job of kind of laying it out. I'd probably add that, at the time when I joined the network, which is, as Aria said, 2020, so we're kind of right in the kind of belly of the pandemic. And at that time, my PhD research, I was part of a research group thinking about temporality and time. And I was really struck by the way the change of pace and the pacing of the network itself allowed, I guess, a different way of working and thinking to be possible. So the change of pace for all of us, we're kind of arrested in our automatic and kind of like pace of research. Field work is suspended. Working together in person is suspended. And so what we've got instead as researchers, and particularly within the network, is an opportunity to work together in a kind of focused and contained environment. For me, what was one of the strengths of those early workshops was the opportunity to come together, have a whole day of thinking quite closely with texts, with critical material, with artwork, with respondents and with speakers. One of the things the pandemic did, obviously, was to expose these kind of incommensibilities and kind of inequalities. But it also kind of, through that kind of changing of pace, gave us an opportunity to really address them and think about them in different ways.
That's incredible. Thank you so much. And I think that just for the listeners who are not necessarily part of research or academic communities, like, I would say that it's a radical intervention to make in amongst a history of marginalisation, both within the health sector, but also within academia. So to bring like these groups of, Black, African and Caribbean people that are researching on our health in such an intentional way, like, I don't know, like 5 years ago? Would something of like this been funded? I don't know. Like, so it's a really exciting thing to bear witness to.
Always grateful to those who've kind of gone before us and who've kind of created an environment, intellectual and cultural climate in which interventions like this are possible. I think we owe a lot to Black feminist thinkers, kind of the generation ahead of us, but also within our generation who are kind of doing vital work, speaking out and kind of creating, calling attention to. I'm sure all of us were online a lot during 2020. And there was a lot of kind of bravery and a lot of people speaking out in ways that I think created the space for this network to be recognised as a necessary intervention.
And what would you say are some of the kind of key political and health disparities that the network is looking to shine a light on?
Well, interestingly, in this second phase that we're taking the network into in the new year, what we're trying to tackle is also research ecology and researcher healthcare. And that's something that we've really seen as a critical sort of intervention in the field at the moment. So we're thinking then about how we can create sustainable, hospitable research environments in academic spaces, which are often quite harmful for both the mental and physical health of scholars and activists with lived experience while working from marginalized and minoritized communities, thinking particularly about histories of medical racism and institutional racism, how that permeates intellectual spaces and the sorts of cultural gatekeeping that happens, barriers to access that we can tackle in that sense. So like Kalechi was saying, thinking then about pace and productivity and those metrics that we've come to sort of internalize, which can be quite harmful to us and also harmful to the creation of meaningful work. So we're really then thinking about how we're going to be translating the work that we do within the academy into third sector spaces, thinking about cross-sectoral collaborations, but also using some of our focused workshop time to really tackle issues about research care and research culture. So maybe that means modeling a slower pace of output or product, remodeling what productivity might mean to us or redefining it. And I think, Kalechi, I mean, definitely jump in, but
yeah, absolutely.
This how is methodologically we're modeling a different way of working and how that can be really empowering as well. In research environments, we are often tied to particular metrics of productivity, like the research excellence framework, which often demands a certain degree and level of commitment of output that places certain demands on labor. And that's compounded by the fact that there are particular barriers to accessing research spaces that scholars from minoritized and marginalized communities, due to histories of racism, financial, socioeconomic sort of privileges that are asymmetrically sort of endowed, that can create this compounded effect or that compounded difficulty in sort of thriving in academic spaces. Also thinking about hierarchies of knowledge and how sometimes just to be seen, heard, and represented when you don't occupy positions of privilege, often white privilege or white epistemic privilege, that can make it even harder. And the kinds of labor that is demanded of you can be more. So, I mean, even just circling back to the pandemic and also in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement, the disproportionate amount of emotional labor that was put on people from minoritized communities to sort of educate and decolonize. I think that's something that's sort of a countercurrent. And I suppose the darker side as well of these EDI metrics or equality, diversity, inclusion or pushes towards decolonization. So then it's really thinking about how we can change research culture, how we can recenter and give voice to, or give a platform for researchers from these communities to speak up, but also fundamentally change research culture in a way that it's meaningful and not harmful to exist within these spaces.
We're all familiar within academia of zero in on particular pressures, for example, to kind of publish in journals, publish work, and that takes a huge amount of labour just to kind of be quite specific about the long and iterative process of getting a journal article published, and that being one of the metrics by which your professional advancement or your research value is kind of measured. That may not align with different modes of knowledge production, particularly when you're working with communities, thinking about engaged research, thinking about working with grassroots groups. That might not be an output that has the same value. And so you're pulled in two different directions. And so it's, yeah, thinking about epistemic hierarchies and ways to value relationality outside of the academy.
That's brilliant. And just for the purpose of the listeners, when we say epistemic, we mean knowledge, and how that knowledge, and knowledge in terms of writing, in terms of research, and how that is valued, and how that is often put on a hierarchy. And in terms of relationality, we mean our connections outside of the workplace, outside of the network, like within our families, within our communities. And I guess like what you're talking about in terms of the work you're doing is about putting those things into conversation and recognizing that when we come to work, when we're in work, we're all of those things at once.
Absolutely. And I think it's about giving space for people to, or creating the space for people to bring their whole selves in all its different iterations into their work. And I think there's often been this discordance or disconnect between academia and, you know, ground level experiential reality, quote unquote. And I think to really dismantle that, we need to think about the language we're using. I mean, even I sort of like fall into academic traps of using words like epistemic when I could have just said knowledge. But I think it's sort of, you know, occupational hazards. And I mean, in some of the work that I've been doing around mental health, we've often come up against challenges of using academic activist language like mad studies or activism or ableism and things like that, and having to actually translate that to people who work in the third sector. And it's just, I think it's really critical in this like new phase to start thinking about how this work meaningfully circulates across different spaces and isn't sort of enshrined within an ivory tower, really.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that we have to defend intellectualism. We have to defend empirical research. We have to defend secondary data collection. We have to defend all our processes when it comes to being researchers and academics. But on the flip side of that, we also have to find ways to bring people into our world and how we're trying to communicate about the social world. Like, it has to be both of those things at once. And that kind of communicating about the social world needs to really think critically about how intellectualism has sometimes or often marginalized particular groups. And yeah, it's reclaiming space, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think also thinking about questions of access in terms of accessibility as well, and how academia produces certain normative models of working, normative models of what the mind, the body should do. And that's often steeped in colonial ideas or colonial biological constructions, but also then thinking about, you know, making space for neurodiversity, different modes of production. And I think that's why even this podcast series that we're doing with you is such a great sort of form of reframing what output looks like and how we can communicate ideas to the public as well, and really engage with people.
And also an opportunity, as Aria said, to kind of reflect on our own processes. I think there's nothing like moving into a different register, moving into a different medium, moving from like writing on a laptop and thinking in that way, or kind of engaging with text, to, you know, having a conversation, moving into a different mode, to call you to reflect on your own processes and where you are. And I think that process of self-reflection has to be constant.
We're all always a process of becoming, aren't we? And we can hold each other to account, we can check in on each other. And the best way to do that as intellectuals is about engaging in the combination of our work but also our community. And I think that that's what you're definitely showing within the Black Health and Humanities Network, is that the importance of the collective. So just for the listeners, it would be really great if you could introduce just some of the different research areas that are being sort of honed in on amongst members and the collective. We've got a brilliant lot of episodes ahead where we're going to hear about lots of different aspects of the network. But just as a sort of teaser for the listeners, could you kind of introduce some to us?
Wow, where to begin? I'd say that there is a kind of combination of different disciplines. So we've got people working in social sciences, literary studies. That's my background, and dare I say yours, Aria. And then there is a psychology. So Nikita's work, for example, working with the third sector and working with kind of a clinical communities as well.
Yeah, we've got members who are working like Rhianna Raymond-Williams is working on sexual and reproductive health, looking at the use of digital mediums to empower and educate. We've got Yawande, who looks at poetry as liberatory practice, different people working on narrative and its interventions across mental health and other third sectors, community practice. That I think a through line that really runs through a lot of our work is that translation or toggling between academic spaces and third sector spaces. And that's really what the different podcast episodes are going to shine a light on, I think.
For the network, talking in the broadest sense, like, what would you say are some of your key objectives for the network in the future and going forwards?
Yeah, so in the next phase of network activity, we're going to continue unpacking thematic issues and structural issues around healthcare in Britain. But our workshops are also going to acquire a different dimension, and that's looking at barriers to access in research spaces itself, or research around healthcare. So how can we create more hospitable, habitable environments for researchers working in the field? So a lot of that is going to think about our methodologies, our modes of production, really critically unpacking our forms of output, how we're framing things like what we generate, productivity, etc. And we'll also have a space for an online symposium or a conference every year that we co-badge with a different network. And I think that kind of partnership with a different research community will be really viable. We're also thinking about creating a cross-sectoral mentorship program, and that will just create opportunities for existing and a new cohort of members that we're going to be inviting in the new year. So watch this space. That's just going to create opportunities from the outset for members to see how their work can meaningfully translate across spaces, and also to sort of understand how academia is not necessarily the only option or the only route if they feel like their work might be better placed somewhere else. So it's just giving people the opportunities and the options to do that kind of translation of their work across fields. The focus is really going to sort of build on that early career researcher development, but then also think broadly in the long term. As Kalechi said, a lot of us started during our PhDs and now we're sort of moving on, thinking about what next. So it's really just opening up all these outlets for members to platform their work, have a space to share what they've been researching, but also share it within and beyond academia.
That's amazing. Honestly, like, on behalf of kind of, yeah, Black researchers, Black students, like the future research community, like, just thank you for the work that you're doing. Like, it's so incredible to see such specificity but intention around, like, the fulfillment and the ambitions and the value that Black people can add within this field. And yeah, to have networks like this is just a reminder that there are people that care about how much our knowledge has been marginalized and actually want to make a difference.
One of the things that I guess has been running through this is how much it's kind of a collaborative member-led process. So while we're here today as kind of like the kind of putative leads, definitely has what's been my experience since 2020, gosh, coming up to 4 years now, being part of this network, is how much our own positions and our own research needs guide the direction of the network. And I've definitely seen that kind of coming through. The most recent event that we had, the seminar where Rhianna and Yawande came to speak, I think that was a really influential process, kind of helped us to understand how the network can offer and provide benefits to different members.
Incredible.
Yeah, definitely. It's always been, just to echo Kalechi, sort of member oriented and member led. And I think moving into that next space, that was always sort of in dialogue with members and looking at how our needs and interests might have changed from that 2020 climate where, you know, there was this intense need for connection and sort of the space to develop academic research when everything felt quite insular, lonely, to really thinking about expanding beyond that now.
Amazing. Thank you both so much for joining me today. And listeners, sit tight. We got a couple of weeks of the Black Health and Humanities podcast with Survivor Society coming up. You're going to hear all about this work, from sexual health to play to happiness to joy to waiting and cancer. We've got so many incredible interventions coming up over the coming weeks. So thank you so much to both of you for introducing this.
Thanks, Chantel.
Thank you, Chantel.
This podcast has been sponsored by Pluto Books.
You can grab 50% off all books by using the code SURVIVING50 at PlutoBooks.com.
See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Surviving Society.
To support our work, you can rate,
review and subscribe. To host or produce a series of Surviving Society,
get in touch with us via Twitter or Instagram.